Balkan leaders agreed on a peace settlement. President Clinton announced the breakthrough this morning in Washington.
About an hour ago, I spoke with Secretary Christopher in Dayton, Ohio. He informed me that the presidents of Bosnia, Croatia, and Serbia have reached a peace agreement to end the war in Bosnia, to end the worst conflict in Europe since World War II. After nearly 4 years of 250,000 people killed, 2 million refugees, atrocities that have appalled people all over the world, the people of Bosnia finally have a chance to turn from the horror of war to the promise of peace.
NPR's Tom Jelton has been covering the talks, and he joins me now from Wright-Patterson Air Force Base near Dayton. Tom, what's in the agreement?
Sorry, Bob.
What is in the agreement?
The agreement, what we know is all that what President Clinton said in his announcement from the White House just a few minutes ago. He did say a couple of, he did list a couple of points that were absolutely central to the Bosnian government's negotiating demand, and that is that Sarajevo, the capital, be preserved as a single unified city. He said that there would be one central government for all of Bosnia. Bosnia would be preserved as a state. The central government will have a presidency, a parliament, and a constitutional court with a lot, though not all, of the functions that a central government will have. He said that war criminals, this is a particularly important issue for people in Bosnia, that war criminals, indicted war criminals, will not be able to participate in that government. There are some things he did not specify that we'll have to wait and see. We can presume that the Serb Republic, Bosnia will consist of two parts, a Serb Republic and a Croat Muslim Federation. We can assume, I think, that both sides will have their own armies. President Clinton said there would be an internationally trained police force, a civilian police force, but he didn't say anything about the army. And up until now, we know that the proposal has been that both sides would have their own armies. There are still a few more details that we are waiting to see, territorial issues. He didn't get into which side gets which piece of territory. That was a very contentious problem here right down to the last minute.
Explain how you have a one central government, a country within its borders, and yet you have two federations.
Well, Bob, you've put your finger on the most difficult problem in this whole arrangement. There is no country in the world that is going to be organized like Bosnia is about to be organized. And believe me, there are a lot of skeptics who say it won't work, particularly since each half is going to have its own army. The idea is that there'll be some kind of confederation. They'll both be under an umbrella government, but each half will have its own respective ties on the Serb side to Serbia, on the Croat side to Croatia. This is going to be very difficult to make it work. But as President Clinton said, I think that that Bosnia can count on a lot of help from the international community, and believe me, they'll need it.
The president said the agreement among the leaders of the warring Bosnian factions would provide for one Bosnian nation, and peacekeeping would be provided by a NATO force led by U.S. troops.
The NATO military mission will be clear and limited. Our troops will take their orders only from the American general who commands NATO. They will have authority to meet any threat to their safety or any violation of the peace agreement with immediate and decisive force. And there will be a reasonable timetable for their withdrawal. I am satisfied that the NATO implementation plan is clear, limited, and achievable, and that the risks to our troops are minimized. I will promptly consult with Congress when I receive this plan, and if I am fully satisfied with it, when I see it in its final form.
Well, clearly, Tom, there the president is trying to anticipate the arguments he's going to get for Congress over the deployment of U.S. troops.
Right, Bob. I can tell you that the administration's thinking on this is that their ability to make that case will be vastly improved once they have a peace agreement in hand. They were in a very difficult position of arguing, in a sense, hypothetically for an implementation force. They are counting now, I think, on the Bosnian government to help them to go to Washington and say, We need your help to make this peace plan stick. And the administration is thinking that now with the peace plan signed or initialed, or as it will be this afternoon, and the commitment of the Bosnian government behind it, that they can turn votes around.
He said that they would be responsible to U.S. command, and he outlined a little bit the rules of engagement. Is that going to be enough for Congress? They're going to have more questions.
They're going to have a lot of questions. He also mentioned, Bob, that they will have an exit strategy. That is a very big concern of people in Congress. A lot of members of Congress, for very understandable reasons, are not convinced that this mission can be completed in 1 year, which is the proposal that the Pentagon has put out there. They're worried that 20,000 American soldiers won't be enough to do the very difficult job that the NATO force is going to assign to its constituent units. So there will be a lot of questions that Congress will still have. They want to be convinced that this is a doable mission, a viable mission. I think a lot of them are willing to believe it's an important mission, but they're very worried about some practical problems.
Questions about the deployment of U.S. troops, and as you said earlier, questions about whether this arrangement's really going to work with the various confederations still standing armies in the territory.
And President Clinton mentioned, for example, that refugees will have the right to return to their homes. You know, Bob, 2 million people have been displaced from their homes in Bosnia since this war began. If 2 million people actually tried to go back to their homes, you would have the ingredients for a very conflictive situation. Now, do these NATO forces, including American soldiers, accompany those people back home? Do they try to provide them some kind of security escort, or do they merely patrol the separation line between these two armies? The answers to those questions will really determine whether, in fact, we have two separate states.
Tom, thank you very much.
Sure.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Craig Windham. President Clinton has announced that negotiators have reached a comprehensive agreement to end the 3.5-year-old war in Bosnia. Mr. Clinton outlined some of the details of the agreement.
The peace plan agreed to would preserve Bosnia as a single state within its present borders and with international recognition. The state will be made up of two parts, the Bosnian-Croat Federation and the Bosnian Serb Republic, with a fair distribution of land between the two. The capital city of Sarajevo will remain united. There will be an effective central government, including a national parliament, a presidency, and a constitutional court, with responsibility for foreign policy, foreign trade, monetary policy, citizenship, immigration, and other important functions.
The president was speaking just a few minutes ago in the Rose Garden at the White House. The agreement was reached after U.S. mediators presented Balkan leaders with a last-ditch proposal to overcome a stubborn territorial impasse that had threatened to scuttle a comprehensive agreement. A ceremony to initial the pact was set for mid-afternoon at the Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Ohio, where Bosnian, Serbian, and Croatian delegations have been working with mediators since November 1st. The president said all parties to the talks want a strong military force to supervise the start of the peace agreement. After reviewing the pact and consulting with congressional leaders, Mr. Clinton said he intends to move ahead with plans to send up to 20,000 U.S. troops to take part in a NATO peacekeeping force. The president said the U.S. troops will take orders from an American general and be able to defend themselves with decisive force. Acting Israeli Prime Minister Shimon Peres has formed a new government. Peres is expected to complete the term of slain Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin. NPR's Eric Weiner reports.
Virtually all of Israel's political parties have agreed to support a Shimon Peres government following the assassination of Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin earlier this month. Peres will serve as Prime Minister at least until November, when elections are scheduled. During that time, he's pledged to continue Israel's gradual withdrawal from West Bank towns and has suggested that he plans to aggressively pursue a peace agreement with Syria. Peres has also reportedly made several cabinet changes. He's expected to appoint Israel's most decorated soldier, General Ehud Barak, as foreign minister, a move designed to reassure those Israelis who question Peres' security credentials. Peres will formally present his new government to the Knesset, Israel's parliament, sometime tomorrow. This is Eric Weiner in Jerusalem.
On Wall Street at this hour, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is up nearly 8 points at 4991.02 in heavy trading of 177 million shares. In the over-the-counter market, the NASDAQ Composite Index is down 9.75 points. This is NPR News. The defense has begun presenting its case in the retrial of Lyle and Eric Menendez in Los Angeles. The prosecution claims the brothers plotted to kill their parents to inherit the family's estate. The defense contends the brothers acted out of self-defense. Rank-and-file production workers at the nation's largest aircraft maker vote today on a proposed 3-year contract. The vote is expected to end a 6-week-old strike by machinists in Boeing plants in 3 states. From Seattle, Ingrid Lobet of member station KPLU reports.
Under the new contract offer, Boeing machinists will pay medical premiums for the first time, but those premiums will be lower than they were under the company's original offer. Boeing will continue as it sees fit to subcontract work out to foreign and non-union suppliers, but it will notify the union in advance. It will pay severance to workers who lose their jobs as a result, and it will, quote, seriously consider employee suggestions for keeping the work in-house. Reactions on the picket line to the new proposal have been mixed. Few seem thrilled with it, but many say they're eager to return to work, and union negotiators are urging approval. About 10% of plant workers have been crossing the picket line during the strike, more in Kansas, fewer in the state of Washington. For National Public Radio, I'm Ingrid Lobet in Seattle.
An autopsy is scheduled today on the body of world and Olympic figure skating champion Sergei Grinkov, who collapsed and died during a practice session at Lake Placid, New York on Monday. Paramedics were on the ice within 90 seconds, but they were unable to revive the 28-year-old skater. Separatist leader Lucien Bouchard has ended weeks of speculation and says he will seek to become the new premier of Quebec. The announcement means he's likely to become the leader of the government in the French-speaking province early next year, a position that he could use as a platform for a new drive for independence. Bouchard is credited with nearly gaining a majority vote for independence in the recent referendum in Quebec. I'm Craig Windham, NPR News in Washington.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Jean Cochran. The Federal Communications Commission has given final approval to the Westinghouse takeover of CBS. The decision was unanimous, with commissioners expressing their satisfaction that Westinghouse's promise to increase children's programs would translate into at least 3 hours of educational television per week. Chairman Reed Hunt called the decision an historic event and said it's also a very good day for kids. There's been some improvement in the U.S. trade deficit. The gap narrowed by 0.1% in September to $8.3 billion. That's the lowest level in 9 months, helped along by record exports. The U.S. sold $67 billion worth of goods and services abroad. That helped offset a rise in imports to $75 billion. The trade gaps with China and Japan both narrowed, while the deficit with Mexico grew. Pennsylvania Senator Arlen Specter made it official this morning in Philadelphia, announcing that he is suspending his bid for the White House.
I am suspending my candidacy because I'm out of money. If my fortune should be reversed, and if there are enough Americans who would like to see me maintain my candidacy, I am ready, willing, and able to continue the candidacy.
Technically, Specter remains a candidate so that he can qualify for federal matching funds to offset his campaign debt. The White House is assessing possible changes in President Clinton's plan to visit Europe next week because of the Bosnian Peace Accord. Spokesman Mike McCurry said a lot of planning and work is going on to see what consequences there are to the agreement and how it can quickly be implemented. Officials say the president might add a stop in Germany to visit U.S. troops who will be part of the U.S. contingent in Bosnia. The president hopes to win congressional approval for sending some 20,000 U.S. troops to join a NATO-led peacekeeping mission. France said today that a French commander will be put in charge of the contingent of French and foreign troops when that peacekeeping force is set up. From Paris, Lynn Terry reports.
Countries in the South Pacific were quick to condemn the test. New Zealand Foreign Minister Don McKinnon said he was exasperated and disgusted by the explosion. As for Australian Prime Minister Paul Keating, he said he was appalled that France continued to show disregard for feelings in the South Pacific. And in Japan, the government called in the French ambassador to lodge a formal protest. But in France, there was little reaction to the blast. The defense ministry said it was under 40,000 tons. or about twice the size of the bomb dropped on Hiroshima. The French tests have created friction in the European Union. President Jacques Chirac took the unprecedented step of canceling meetings with Italy, Belgium, and Finland this week after they voted for a UN resolution criticizing nuclear testing. For National Public Radio, I'm Lynn Terry in Paris.
On Wall Street, the Dow was up 12 points in moderate trading. This is NPR. Shimon Peres became Israel's 12th prime minister today after taking an oath of office. In a show of unity after Yitzhak Rabin's assassination, Peres' new government was approved by a wide margin in parliament. In his address to lawmakers, he promised to press on with Middle East peacemaking, and he appealed to the president of Syria to speed up negotiations. Peres said he will seek a broader dialogue with Israelis opposed to his policies, but will crack down on Jewish militants. In Florida, Dade County commissioners have reinstated a controversial teen curfew. NPR's Derek Reveron has that story.
Dade County is one of several areas of the nation, including Atlanta, Washington, D.C., and Dallas, that have passed teen curfews in an effort to crack down on juvenile crime. Dade commissioners passed the law by a vote of 9-2 and scheduled it to take effect January 1st. This will be the second time that Dade County has approved the curfew. The law was originally passed nearly 2 years ago, but it was tied up in a series of court challenges by the American Civil Liberties Union, which claimed that the law violates the constitutional rights of teenagers. Recently, however, a Florida appeal court rejected that argument, paving the way for the curfew to be revived. In Miami, I'm Derek Reveron reporting.
The Labor Department's pension regulators reportedly are investigating more than 300 companies who are suspected of misusing employee contributions to their 401k retirement plans. In an interview with the Wall Street Journal, Labor Secretary Robert Rice said many firms apparently are using the contributions to cover business expenses or simply to stay afloat. He said the Labor Department will be filing lawsuits against those firms. The machinist union strike against Boeing will continue. Last night, the rank and file rejected the latest contract offer. While it would have boosted pensions and offered some job protections, the deal also required workers to start paying part of their health insurance premiums. I'm Jean Cochran, NPR News in Washington.